This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
كل شيخ تفضل إن شاء الله you're live.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وأصلي وأسلم على سيد الأولين والآخرين نبينا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه وبارك وسلم. All praise are due to Allah, Lord of the worlds, and peace and blessings be upon our beloved Prophet Muhammad, the master of the first and the last, and his family, his companions, and all those who implement the sunnah and establish this in their lives to the day of judgment. My beloved brothers and sisters, to our friends, our colleagues, our students, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has again blessed us with another opportunity to reflect upon our present situation, the crises that we are going through, and to try to find an Islamic way out. And this is important for Muslims today to be very practical, to take the theoretical knowledge that we have and put it in a form that can be used by our community. And we find ourselves in unprecedented times. In a sense, we find ourselves in waters that Muslims have never been living in for centuries. In the 20th century, going into the 21st, we found that hundreds and thousands, if not millions of Muslims, migrated out of the Muslim world. They left the traditional Dar al-Islam and settled in the lands of people who, in many cases, do not even believe in Allah. But the crisis, our internal crisis in our nation, and the necessity made it permissible for them, and in some cases made it absolutely necessary for them to leave the lands of Islam and to go into the lands of disbelief and secularism. And with the rise of the new technologies in the world, with cyberspace now covering the minds of people all over the planet, we have become, in a sense, a global village. And so the challenges that the world are facing are challenges that Muslims are facing as well. The challenges that our ummah has found itself in are some of the most difficult we have ever faced within our history. But with the mercy of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, with the creativity that Muslims have had in order to come up with solutions in the most difficult situations, there's always hope. And so looking at the challenges that Muslims are facing in terms of how we have been moved, in a sense, out of the Muslim world, you could call it a type of forced migration. And I remember being in a session with a great Sudanese scholar, Sheikh Jaffa, Sheikh Idris, and he was trying to find some sort of justification for Muslims who were living in Canada and the United States. And he came and he honestly said to the people, I can't find any justification for you being here. It's not enough to want to have a supermarket that's filled with food. It's not enough to have running water 24 hours a day or electricity 24 hours a day. This is unprecedented. In looking at the sources, the Sheikh found that Muslims left the Dar al-Islam for diplomatic reasons. They also left for business reasons. They left to call to the good and forbid evil. But in 99% of the cases, when they finished their limited activities, they returned to the lands of Islam. And so when Sheikh Jaffa made his fatwa, in a sense, that I can't find any real justification for you, the people were not satisfied. And they went to his room and they bothered him all night. And the next day he came back to the conference and he said, I changed my fatwa. Because now you have proven to me the reasons why you are coming. It is so dangerous to live in some of the Muslim countries that there's valid reasons to leave. There's sometimes better opportunities in Europe and the Americas to practice Islam than in some of the war-torn, oppressive, so-called Muslim regimes. So there is a justification, but we have to make sure that our intention is to continue with our Islam and to hold on to the rope. And so this is a forced migration that has happened. And after the major conflicts that we see, the famines in Yemen, the crisis in Syria, the destructions in different parts of the Muslim world, we are seeing Muslims jumping in, literally jumping into the Mediterranean and fleeing to European countries. And this forced migration has pushed Muslims who traditionally lived in farming areas into urban sprawling developments, large cities. And urbanization has its benefits in that you are able to contact people quickly, but it also had its has a downside in that you're forced into a box and you're forced to change literally your lifestyle. You may have grown up in a village. You may have grown up in a wide open area, in an area that Muslims were dominant in. And so to call the adhan, to dress in Islamic clothing, to eat halal food, these things were understood to be normal. But to do this in non-Muslim areas, in many cases, is a struggle. And we find today that in Switzerland and places like this, they are banning the hijab. They are making it difficult. They're now saying that the French want to even ban halal food. So this is an ongoing struggle. And what it's causing in our younger generation, and it's natural for young people to want to be with the majority, it is a loss of traditional values. And so our concepts of halal and haram, our concept of modesty, our concepts of the limits between male and female, the respect for adults, the care for the youth, the nurturing of our elderly people, it's being lost. And we are literally in a crisis. And hundreds of families are seeking assistance from their leaders and their teachers and their scholars to try to deal with these tremendous value losses that are happening. It's leading to a number of very critical challenges. One is illegal substance abuse, that drugs, alcohol, are pouring into the lives of our young people. In some Muslim countries, you'll actually find this in the regular halal stores. And I remember traveling in one of the Muslim countries with a friend of mine. We were setting up a tour, and we went to a hotel, and we were informed that this is the halal hotel. And we went to the hotel, and we sat down in the restaurant and checked out the halal menu. It was halal, but we looked in the corner, and there was a bar serving alcohol. So we said to the brother, how can you say this is halal when you're serving alcohol? And he said, no, I mean, our business is based on tourism. So your food is halal. If you don't want to drink, don't go over to the bar. So the traditional values, the traditional system that would not have allowed alcohol inside of a restaurant or a home or an Islamic establishment is now changed because of this forced migration and the loss of traditional values. It is also causing our young people to change their relationships. And one of the most harmful, hurtful realities is unwanted pregnancy, that there are many young Muslim women who are becoming pregnant. This is causing a family crisis. And so we need to have some practical guides to come out of this. How do we think as Muslims? Because we're literally faced with new issues every day. And so we need to develop a type of Islamic consciousness, a type of ability. It's a type of ijtihad. This is a religious decision. You may have to make decisions on your feet. There may be food that you're coming in contact with. There may be circumstances. And so by having an understanding of Islamic jurisprudence, what we call fiqh, and that is our understanding, not just a theoretical one, but a practical one. This can help us to solve some of the issues that we are facing. And so, based upon the writings of the great scholars, Imam al-Ghazali, rahimahullah, who was not only a great imam of spirituality, but he was a faqih. He was the master of fiqh of Baghdad, of the Nizamiya, probably one of the greatest universities in Islamic history. And his Mustasfa is one of the principal books in Usul al-Fiqh. So these are the foundations of your understanding. How do you live as a Muslim? What are your foundations as a person living? And amongst these principles, and these have been made very available by present day scholars like Sheikh Yusuf al-Qaradawi. And amongst these principles are the following. Let's look at some of these so we can develop a practical way of thinking. And this is a way of looking at the world itself. Number one, that the basis of all things is permissibility. Aslul ashya al-ibaha. When young people are learning about Islam or people are embracing Islam, the first thing the teachers usually say is don't do this and don't do that. Some new Muslims even told me that they got a list of 25 don'ts before they got a do. And so it looked like Islam is like a negative way of life. And maybe because so many things are haram around us, it appears like we are negative. But the basis of Allah's creation in the way to look at every issue is that the basis is permissibility. It's halal before it becomes haram. And that's important when you're facing an issue because it gives you a positive way of looking at the substance or the product that you're dealing with. The second point that we discussed in the previous class is that prohibition of things is due to their impurity and their harmfulness. And so haram, the things being made haram, there is a reason for this. The pig, lahm al-khinziyah, being made haram is not because the pig is not a creation of Allah. The pig is, and it serves a purpose in terms of dealing with waste and garbage within a society, but it's not for us to eat. And when we look at the body of the pig, scientists have found that the majority of the body is actually fat. And that because of the amount of impurity coming into the body of the pig, that there are special mechanisms in the body to release pus. There are special mechanisms that make the meat of the swine impure for us to eat. Also, the swine flus and the diseases and the viruses that come along with a body such as this makes the pig what we call najis ayn. The pig itself is haram. And you can look at the different substances and products that are haram. You look at gambling. Gambling in itself is harmful. Look at alcohol and drugs, al-khamar, it is impure and harmful in itself. And you can continue to go on and find how haram actually is a great benefit to us in our life, but it's not the basis of everything. But now getting to the finer points of this, and this is what the youth have to face. Whatever leads to haram is haram itself. And this is an important principle in Usul al-Fiqh, because if something is leading you down that path, then we need to stop it. The Prophet ﷺ said, "Da ma yuribuk ila ma la yuribuk." Leave that which is doubtful for that which is not doubtful. An example of this, for instance, is in many Muslim countries. And here you have a picture of a so-called halal beer. And there are different forms of beer and wines that have zero alcohol content. What is happening in many places is that it's leading Muslims down a path of following the Western concepts of enjoyment of wine and beer when they eat. And this is literally, you can see, this is in Indonesia. I'll mention it. There's actually a beer, a product, and it says on it, halal in Arabic, and it's beer. So this is an oxymoron. Beer in itself, in what we know beer to be, has reached that alcoholic level, but now you're putting on halal, and technically speaking, it is zero alcohol. So it could be argued, but in many cases, it's leading you down a path. It's leading you to haram. And I remember one of my friends from California, we were living in Medina, and this is back in the 70s in the old Medina, and the Yemenis used to have these outdoor restaurants, and there's a thatched type of bench that you sit up on, and people would drink their tea and eat their food, and they would smoke shisha. And they started to serve a zero content beer. It had zero alcohol, but it was in a regular beer bottle and set up. And we walked by the restaurant one day and saw our brother sitting there with this beer in his hand. Now, for the average person, for a person who has never lived in a society like this, this might be nothing. They're just trying something different. But for a person who may have been an alcoholic in his past, who comes out of a society, this is reverting. It's literally turning back on his Islamic lifestyle. And so we cautioned the brother, because him sitting there with that beer bottle in his hand, relaxing, just reminded us of our past and reminded our brother that this could lead again to something that is haram. So take it as a principle. If something is leading you into haram, it may be you're smoking, maybe even a cigarette might lead you into haram. Maybe even smoking vapor might lead you into this smoking habit. Shisha itself, that many will say there's nothing wrong with shisha, but again, it's harmful to the body and it's been proven to be harmful, but it might lead you into smoking hashish, that this is dangerous in itself. Another principle in usul al-fiqh, in a very practical sense, is that falsely representing haram as halal is prohibited. You can't represent something that is haram, it is halal. And there's a strange phenomenon going on. It's popped up in Algeria. And hopefully, inshallah, you know, it's not going to make a trend, but there is literally a company that says lahmu khinzir halal. And this is a picture of the can itself that shows the pig and the halal sign. And it's saying madbuh ala tariqatul islamiyya. So it's saying that the pig has been slaughtered in an Islamic way. So they took the pig and they said, Bismillah, Allahu Akbar, to make it halal, but the pig is najis ayn. So you can say Bismillah all you want. It does not make lahmul khinzir halal. And just the representation of this in itself is prohibited. And you have to remember that when something is prohibited, it actually causes sin and could be harmful to the human being in the next life. Another important principle that comes out of this, and that is that not only just falsely representing haram, but by giving haram things nice names. And so this is a phenomenon that's been going on, especially recently, and it's spreading internationally, where on the street, they have nicknames for dangerous drugs. And many of our youth get caught up in some of these names and actually fooled into thinking that the drug may actually be beneficial and in some cases permissible. I'll give you some example. And these are some of the drugs which the youth know about, the people on the streets, and Atvian is one of the drugs being taken. They call it candy. Valium, which is supposed to bring comfort to a person, but it will ease your pain to the point where you can become a drug addict. They call it jelly, or they call it eggs. DMT, they call it the spirit molecule. Ketamine, which is a drug on the street, they call it jet. It's going to take you off like a jet plane. LSD, lysergic acid that takes you on a psychedelic trip and takes you totally out of your consciousness. And that would be described as khamar. It's called by some electric Kool-Aid. PCP, which is not so common today, but when I was in Medina, I can recall, this is back in the 70s, that PCP was coming out of California and they called it angel's dust. And it was a type of taking the embalmer's fluid used for dead bodies and snorting it up your nose. So they called it angel's dust and purple rain. And I remember the brother said, can you give us a fatwa? So I went to my sheikh of fiqh and I said to him, we need a fatwa on this drug. And he said, what is the name? And I said, Turab al-Malaika, like angel dust. And he said, hat, let me have some of this. Then I described to him what PCP does to the individual. You take the PCP in your body and they strip off their clothes and they run down the street and they don't know what hit them till the next day. He said, no, this is a khamar and this is haram. Cocaine, which is a famous drug on the street, it's called candy or snow. So somebody might walk up to you and said, would you like some candy? They're not talking about Snickers bars or chocolate. They may be talking about cocaine. Crack cocaine, which is a cheap form of cocaine, is called tornado. And heroin, which is a very dangerous substance in itself, a well-known street drug, is called brown sugar. There is also, of course, the marijuana. And marijuana has become a big test for our young generation because it has been made permissible by the society itself. And there are literally cannabis stores that are opening up along the streets. And one might say, okay, cannabis in itself is a drug, but what about alcohol? Because the alcohol, the shops have been opened up for years in our society. And even during the COVID-19, the alcohol shops were actually considered to be essential for Canadian society. And so they remained open. But what about cannabis shops, which are now opening up? Again, something that's going to lead you all the way into something haram. According to Usul al-Fiqh, it's haram in itself. And marijuana, even though somebody may prescribe this to you as a means of a psychological easing of pain, if it leads you, because how it is used, the street culture surrounding the smoking of marijuana, the social life that's connected to it, the other drugs like hashish and opium that marijuana can lead you to, would make it haram in itself, even if they call it Mary Jane. So Mary Jane is a nice sounding Canadian name, but that could be leading you to hellfires. MDMA, which is a dangerous drug, it was called ecstasy. And this drove people crazy when they went to the nightclubs and the discotheques and taking this drugs, even though ecstasy, people, young people want ecstasy in their life, but this is a dangerous drug. The methadrines, the amphetamines, these drugs, it was called speed. And people, young people have need for speed. and they want to always do things fast. This is the generation of getting everything done fast. It's snapshot. It's do everything fast. But methadrine is a dangerous drug, and speed. When a person is on meth, they have one of the most dangerous forms of addiction that is known to mankind. And so regardless of the speed, avoid these drugs. Fentanyl, which is a big street drug, which is widespread throughout our society, they call it Apache, or they call it dance fever, or they call it jackpot. And so they're given fentanyl these different names, and the drug cartels are actually producing fentanyl in Mexico and other countries the same way they produce cocaine, because it's outstripping even cocaine and crack in some parts of the streets. We have it heavily in Vancouver. Of course, in the United States, it's reached Toronto and Montreal. You will find it on the streets. Now, we have to recognize the fact when we're dealing with drugs that there are reasons and there are times when drugs can be of benefit, especially during operations. When your tooth is being extracted, then you need to take some drugs to ease the pain, to take away that feeling. When you're having an operation, you need to take the drugs, and that is permissible because of the necessity of the operation itself. But that does not mean that because you like that feeling, and the next week or the next month, and you felt depressed, you wanted that same soft feeling that the drugs gave you in the dentist's office. This is a different situation. And so there is a use for drugs medicinally, and it needs to be prescribed by a doctor, preferably a Muslim doctor, or a doctor who is sensitive to Islam and to how Muslims look at the world. This is very important because the young people in some cases are being swept up. You remember peer pressure, and that is the influence of the society itself. Peer pressure can come from the friends, or it can come now online. It can come right in your cell phone. Peer pressure is coming out of the movies. It is coming out of the television. It comes out of the styles in the dress. And so this can influence young people to want to test something. And unfortunately, many of these drugs, if you test it even once, you can become addicted, very seriously addicted to the drug. So we need to street-proof our youth. We need to let them know what's happening. And young women who are going out, they think that they're going to their friend's house. There's a party there. And they said, oh, it's okay. Even sometimes so-called Muslim parties. And you know, and they are passing out drinks to the people. They have date rape drugs that they can literally put into the drink, and it cloaks itself. And the young girl or the woman can pass out and not know what hit her or what happened to her until the following day. And so nice names do not make permissibility. And even good intentions do not make things that are haram acceptable. We are in very dangerous waters now because there's an economic recession on the horizon. But a good intention does not make something halal that is haram. And I can never forget being in one of the masjids. I had finished Jumu'ah. One of the brothers came up to me and said, Brother Abdullah, please, I need a fatwa. I just won the lottery. And I have $25,000 in my hand. What should I do? He said, I'll give zakat. I'll pay 2.5%. I'll give to the charities. What can I do? And I told him clearly, I cannot make permissible that which is impermissible. Haram is haram. I can't make it halal, even though you want to do something good. And so a person can't go on the lottery and say, I'm doing this in order to be able to pay zakat. So I will gamble, or I will steal. And this is the classical story of Robin Hood. Robin Hood, the story from Europe of a person who was forced to steal, and he would steal from the rich to give to the poor. And so Robin Hood may have been a victim of his circumstance, but a person who steals, who makes the intention to steal, cannot come after their intention and they're involved in it and say, okay, I'll make it good by giving to the poor. That is not the Islamic way of doing things. If we are forced to do certain acts that we don't normally do, there is a permissibility for this. If it is darura, if your life is in danger, there is a permissibility. But good intentions do not make haram things acceptable. And you cannot give it an Islamic name. The reality is, haram is haram, and it is by nature harmful to us. Remember the principle. When things are made haram, it is not because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is being mean or just wants to punish us in this world. We're actually being protected from issues that could be harmful to our bodies, harmful to our lives, harmful to our future generations. And so it is a mercy, the halal, a lifestyle sort of sets limits around us. And people today are finding out that Islamic lifestyle is actually a preferable lifestyle. People are now covering their faces. We're being more modest in their dress. They see the limits with people. They're not touching each other the way they used to touch. And they're being more considerate of elderly people. So there's many aspects of the Islamic lifestyle that are actually coming to fruition today in the world because of the will of Allah Azza wa Jal onto the societies. These are some of our principles, and we need to start to learn to think on our feet and to have our younger generation think on its feet as well. So I want to stop here at this point and open up the floor for any questions that you may have. I've mentioned a number of things and looked at a couple of issues. So the floor is open for any questions that you may have about these issues. I don't see any questions here at this point. Did you see any questions there, Mahmoud?
Sorry, no, Sheikh, I'm not.
Okay, so we have to remember the importance of usul al-fiqh. That is the basis of our understandings. That we need to be equipped with an Islamic understanding, because what is happening in the world, it is unprecedented. The world is going through tremendous changes with the technologies and with the names. And by having a strong foundation, it gives us an Islamic outlook on the world. And that is so important for our younger generation today, to have that balanced outlook, to be able to think on their feet, to make decisions. Sometimes they don't have the ability to ask their parents. They don't have the ability to go, you know, to a scholar, and they have to make a decision. And this hits all of us. And whatever level of society we are living in today, we have to remember that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has blessed us as the basis of everything being permissible. But within that permissibility, there are things that are haram. And we need to know these things to survive the crises that are coming at us in the 21st century. So I leave you with these thoughts. If you have questions, write them down for next week, inshallah. And I pray that Allah would bless your families and our society in these very difficult times that we are going through. And that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala can help us to make the right decisions, to think on our feet for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and get the best in this life and the hereafter. So I leave you with these thoughts and I ask Allah to have mercy on me and you. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.